Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
I've not really done much. It's a pretty boring day, really. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really going to talk too much about the test because we're going to talk about that later. But obviously, that was not very good.
We sure are.
Yeah, I'll just quickly say that was terrible by England. To be honest, it was terrible by both teams, batting-wise.
Great bowling, though, from Akshar Patel. Oh, absolutely sensational. Yeah. 11 wickets. Ashwin again reaching 400 test wickets.
Yeah, fair play.
Credit
to
where credit's due. I mean, India's spin attack, absolutely sensational.
He did it quicker than Nathan Lyon, so I guess that's one up on.
Second fastest ever, only behind Mathai Muralitharan. 77 test matches it took.
I mean, that is seriously impressive. But the fact that he can do it in all around the world as well. Yeah, he's a very, very good bowler. Both of them are very, very good. But yeah, England weren't very good, unfortunately. So probably cost them the whole series. They'll probably do well to draw now, but you never know. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We will indeed, yeah. I mean, England definitely on the ropes now in this series and out of contention for the World Test Championship as well. But Joe, as you rightfully said, we'll talk about that and touch upon that in Winter Watch later on in today's episode. But of course, today here on the County Cricket Podcast, we are also joined by a special guest coming live from my county of Warwickshire. We have got Warwickshire's performance analyst, James Thompson. So James, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, boys. It's a pleasure to talk all things Warwickshire. And yeah, it's been a good day, actually. Been over in the indoor school this morning, working with a few of the lads. We're sort of split into two training bubbles here at Edgbaston, just because of COVID. So yeah, I've been working with a few of the batters in my group this morning on the old sidearm. And it's been a pretty busy morning.
Fair play. Who's looked the best out of the batting corps so far?
I was throwing at Rhodesy, Haney and Lamy this morning, and yeah, they hit him well. Red and white.
Did you snick any of them off?
Not this morning. Not this morning.
Oh, shame.
Took a couple of poles yesterday. Gambles of the morning yesterday, so we were in the indoor school. We started training at 9. Obviously, India were 3 down yesterday morning. You just spoke about the test match. We go over to the indoor school starting at 9. Come back over to the pavilion sort of 1 o'clock and Stuart Broad's batting. What's going on?
Well, yeah, we're going to dissect that later on in today's podcast because the only way in which you can actually describe that third test, the day-night test in Ahmedabad, is bizarre or extraordinary. There's so many different synonyms and different words you can actually utilise to describe that test. But I feel like everyone's still trying to find that perfect word to describe what on earth actually happened. But of course, before we get into today's, well, dissection of England versus India, we of course have the county news. This is how we start here on the weekly episodes. So we start down at Middlesex, because Mitchell Marsh, the Australian all-rounder, has joined the Saxes for the 2021 T20 Blast. So, Joe, I'll start with you first on this one, mate. What do you make of this particular piece of business from the London club?
Well, it's a really, obviously, good signing. Mitchell Marsh has had loads of experience now all around the world. Obviously, kind of in the IPL last year, but obviously got cut a bit short for him. And is a full international. So, it's a great piece of business. They've obviously got Mujeeb. They've kind of really balanced their side out well now. You feel like they've got one of the best young spinners in the world in T20 cricket in Mujeeb and one of the most experienced all-rounders in the world in Mitchell Marsh, who is also, by the way, the captain of his BBL side, the Scorchers. So that obviously helps have almost another leader. So yeah, I think Middlesex are looking quite a good way for the next year's T20 or this year's T20. Yeah, that's a great signing. I feel like with Mitch Marsh, he's so versatile. He can open the ball if he needs to. I wouldn't put that past him. You know, he can obviously bowl really well at the death and throughout the middle overs as well. And with the bat, he can bat pretty much anywhere. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw him like opening the batting. Like, again, wouldn't put that past him. He seems like the kind of guy who can do something like that. He's that kind of cricketer. So for me, that's a great signing and just real good depth for Middlesex.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the V word, versatility, of course, because that is something which really does describe Mitch Marsh's game. The only thing that I would say about him is he's injury prone. You mentioned there about his IPL being cut short. It was in the first game against my franchise, RCB. So this is something which Middlesex are going to have to be careful with, because when he's fit, when he's fully fit and actually playing, He's absolutely dynamite. And James, I just wanted to know your thoughts. As a performance analyst, what do you make of Mitch Marsh as a player? How impressed are you with that signing from a Middlesex perspective?
Yeah, I'm happy he signed for Middlesex. He's out of our group. He's out of the way.
Yeah.
he is. That is very true.
No, he's a weapon, isn't he? He provides quality with bat, ball and in the field. As Joe mentioned, he's captain of the Perth Scorchers. He had a really, really good BBL. Anyone that can score a test match 100 has got a really good test technique and has got a solid foundation from. So, you know, something that underpins our training here is, you know, if you've got the skills to play red ball and leave the ball and get in good shapes against a red ball that's moving around, that's more easily transferable into a white ball setting where you get into the same shapes and just play the ball a little bit earlier to clear the field, clear the ropes.
Good point. Very, very good point. And also with regards to Mitch Marsh, I know we touched upon there his batting, but just looking at that Middlesex core, the bowling per se, heading into 2021, Marsh, who can supplement that, obviously as a seam bowling option, alongside the likes of Tom Helm, Toby Rowland-Jones, Stephen Finn if they need him, and then of course the two spinners in Nathan Souter and Mujeeba Rahman. It's a pretty fearsome looking bowling attack, isn't it, from a Middlesex perspective?
Yeah, it's a force to be reckoned with, isn't it? They're going to be good. It might be that we come up against them at some stage if we go well in our group. So it might come down to matchups and things like that that Kunal spoke about before on one of your podcasts. You know, it's a tricky one because, you know, we've got a good bowling attack in our eyes. It could be a good game if it's a Bears v Middlesex game.
I'd also like to add, we also have an excellent bowling lineup.
There it is.
arguably one of the strongest in the country. So I'd also like to add that.
I thought you might, Joe. I was going to say, yeah, for the listeners out there, today is going to be very Warwickshire-based. As you can tell, we've got two, well, obviously a massive Bears fan and Warwickshire's performance analyst, but Joe will be chiming in from time to time with some good old-fashioned Lancashire bias when he sees fit. But moving on from Middlesex then, we do just have one more piece of business before we go into today's main topic about Warwickshire and then, of course, the day-night test match as well. And that is Harry Swindles. He signed a two-year contract extension at Leicestershire. So we spoke in depth with Sean Jarvis and Dan Weston. They said they weren't finished down at Grace Road. They were telling the truth because Harry Swindles, the young wicketkeeper batsman, has signed a two-year extension with the Running Foxes. So James, I'll start with you for this one, purely because he is part of the North Group. We played against Harry Swindles before in both red ball and white ball cricket. What do you make of this piece of business from the Running Foxes?
It's good. You know, he's played a lot of second team cricket. Mm-hmm. A lot of second team cricket that you might have heard Canal speak about it. You know, we code the games.
Yep.
So it's an ECB point of view that we have to code all the first team games. That's a non-negotiable. But any second team cricket is sort of like, if we can get it, brilliant, let's get it. Leicestershire are really good at coding their games. And he's performed well. So I reckon in the next few years, he's definitely a name to look out for from Leicestershire behind the stumps. And Leicestershire having their head coach of Paul Nixon, it's a good place to be.
100%, yeah. And of course, he's the third English wicketkeeper to have signed a contract down at, well, the Upton Steel Grace Road, as we should say, as Jarve said. But yeah, alongside Sam Bates and Lewis Hill. But James, just before we do move on, would you mind just explaining what coding is? Because of course, we were told by Canal, he's explained it in depth to us. But just for those out there who don't particularly know what it is in terms of that type of analysis.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them know, please.
Always happy to talk analysis. So
good.
It's part of my role here at Warwickshire to, like I say, code the game. And what that entails is, coding the game for me starts 2 days before the game here at Edgbaston, putting my cameras up. So either end of the ground, for those of you that know Edgbaston, we've got the pavilion end and the Wyatt stand. So on the second floor of the Wyatt stand, there's actually some boxes and balconies that that my camera hangs off. And then I use the Sky Camera Gantry pavilion side for my camera this end. I then get those feeds into my laptop. And at the end of every over, I swap the feed, obviously, depending on which over they're bowling from. And then during the game, it's my role here to start recording as the bowler starts running in for every ball. And there's a number of things that we record. So the order of which I do things is that we record a pitch map. So obviously sort of where the ball lands to sort of record line and length. We record a Beehive or Ball Arrival. So for those that don't know what that is, it's the graphic that Sky sometimes show, where you've got the silhouette of a batter and where the ball would pass the stumps. Yep. Had he not made contact, or you know, it's hit his pad or something. We put what shot the batsman's played, what their feet movement was, so whether he was forward, back, down the wicket, ducked, that sort of stuff. Any events that might have happened at that particular ball, so such as in the air, struck on helmet, appeal, those sorts of things. What delivery the bowler bowled. And then finally, how many runs. It's quite fun. It's good to be around. What that allows is, I mean, people might be thinking, yeah, great, what you do with it. Whilst I'm sat on my laptop, I'll have another laptop next to me that's connected wirelessly to mine. So players can come in after something, let's say during a championship game, Brooksy might have just bowled his last over of a spell, come off to change his boots or something, and he just wanted to look at his first over and see where he bowled the ball. He can very quickly get access to that as 12th as his fielding. You know, batsmen use it to look at dismissals, but I can also use it. So at the end of the game, we upload it to a central place. So I've got access to loads of footage of previous first-class games. So, you know, for example, if I wanted to, I could go into the stats of those games, look at, you know, every Worcester game, every Worcester white ball T20 game, and look at all of Ben Cox's dismissals. And that's how we then start to formulate our analysis plans.
Wow. I mean, that just sounds like the cricket badger's dream. I mean, I'm just listening to that little bit of envy. I'm going to be honest, James. I mean, that'd be absolutely fantastic, having all of that footage, all of those stats, all of that detail at your fingertips, basically. What a job. What a job. Yeah. And of course, we'll talk about that more as the podcast progresses. But Joe, just before we do move on to today's main bulk of the podcast, which is, of course, about the Bare and Ragged staff, I just wanted to know your thoughts about Harry Swindells. What do you make of that particular piece of business from Leicestershire?
I think Harry Swindells is a good cricketer. And I think the most important thing for that for me is it adds really good competition, especially with Lewis Hill. Those two, for me, are now kind of at the forefront of taking that wicket-keeping spot, because there's only one in a side. Obviously, you can get in as a batter, but if you're a wicket-keeper, that's what you want to be doing, isn't it? That's your main, half of your main discipline, so that's what you want to be doing. It's going to have some great competition. It's going to be really exciting to see for Leicester fans, and as I said, there may be times when they both play in the same side, but it's going to be really interesting to see who goes for that one spot of wicketkeeper, and also where they bat as well, how that kind of balances the side. Maybe someone goes a bit further up the order, but yeah, as I say, it's quite a good signing. Well, it's not signing really, a contract extension.
Yeah, I'd agree. And again, it's just the running foxes. We've mentioned this so many times on the podcast. They're quite a revolution. It still hasn't stopped. The wheels are still churning out. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what Jarve, Nico and everybody at Leicestershire County Cricket Club have done. There's a real buzz and a real sense of optimism around the club heading into 2021. And again, it's admirable. And that to me shows a lot of promise if you're a Leicestershire fan, and definitely exciting times down Upton Steel Grace Road. But of course, that's it pretty much for this week's county news. So let's get into this week's main topic about Warwickshire County Cricket Club, because the last 2 to 3 weeks for Warwickshire have been incredibly busy. And just to give you guys a bit of a background understanding, let's just go through some of this week's and, of course, this month's key signings from the Bare and Ragged staff. So first of all, Peter Milan, he has signed on as Warwickshire's county championship. And of course, he can play in T20 cricket as well. He signed as our overseas player for 2021. Carlos Brathwaite, which is a fantastic signing, by the way, has signed on as an overseas player for the 2021 Blast. Jake Lintott, a former guest of ours here on the County Cricket Podcast, has signed a 3-year deal with the Bears. Sam Hain, arguably everyone's favourite batsman down at Edgbaston, has signed a 2-year contract extension with the Bears. And finally, Ollie Hannan-Dorby, the Owl himself, has also signed a 2-year extension with the Bears to take his time at Edgbaston to the decade mark. So, James, obviously I'll start with you for this one, seeing as you are Warwickshire's performance analyst, and I know you are absolutely champing at the bit to discuss all things Warwickshire. But just before we actually go into those signings, we haven't actually really talked about your role. So what is the role of a performance analyst? You mentioned about coding, for example, and the statistics side of the game. But what actually does a performance analyst do, per se?
Yeah, so good question. I'd sort of split my role into two, really. So we've got the in-season bit, mm-hmm. Which is where I'm probably working 7 days a week, not seeing anyone, and up all hours.
Jeez.
And then we've got the out of season bit, where really my role is to just sort of research the game. So search for if there's any new trends, see sort of what's happening around the world in white and red ball cricket. It might be that winning first innings averages in a red ball game are changing. That sort of thing, so that it's my job to sort of keep on top of that, potentially do a stats review of the last year for the Bears boys. In terms of in the season, that's when I'm at my busiest. So obviously I've got coding of all three formats, Red Bull, RL50 and T20. This year is going to be even busier, especially with the Birmingham Phoenix being at Edgbaston. Apart from coding, same as Canal said, really, it's a lot of pre-game analysis. So we create a resource that the lads can have before every game. So we've got team iPads that go with the lads. And I don't know whether you've got Apple technology or whether you use Android, but if you look on your iPhone, there's an app called iBooks. What I create and put on that the iPads is an iBook. So there's an interactive iBook. I create a page for every opposition batsman that's in their squad, every opposition bowler, and supply that iBook with footage of their dismissals, of their boundaries, pictures of their wagon wheels for strong shots. This is for white ball. Mm-hmm. So strong shots, and split that up into seam and spin, and then also a beehive of their dismissals of seam and spin, without telling you too much.
Yeah, of course.
We generally have a meeting as well, have a team meeting and sort of go through each player and work out what we're going to do with each player. And then, as Canal said, looking at matchups. So sort of saying, right, is Matt Critchley still struggling in white ball cricket against left-arm seam? That sort of stuff. I'm using that example because Canal used it.
I know, that's now been mentioned 3 times on the podcast. So apologies, Matt. I mean, oh.
Not taking anything away from him. He's a wonderful player. Wonderful player. His 100 at Lords a couple of years ago against Middlesex was superb.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think anyone's denying that, but obviously it is a clear trend and it's something that he will work on. He's a good enough cricketer to smooth it out. But with regards to that passage there, James, that's obviously very, very interesting, of course. And you mentioned the M word. I think we need an alarm or a siren, don't we, Joe? Every single time the matchup word is used, because it is, I don't want to call it cliche, but it is a very overused term nowadays, in particular with us as fans, because we're always obsessed with matchups. You see it on websites, you see it during games, you see it on social media. James, just how important are matchups to Warwickshire County Cricket Club in your analysis? How much of a precedent do they have per se?
Do you know what? That's an excellent question. I think it's hard to identify when we really need a matchup and when we don't. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it could be we're in a situation where the data is telling us we really need a spinner on, but the reading of the game and the wicket and the score is telling us we should probably stay with C. So we do talk about it, but we also talk a lot about trying to react to game situations and trying to play the game through gut feel and instinct, especially in white ball. You know, matchups aren't really a thing in red ball cricket. You know, if you're bowling off spin, then in red ball cricket, you'll generally have a short leg, a catch and mid wicket, a catch and cover and a slip, and try and turn it in and beat the bat. If you're a seamer, you'll probably just try and hit top of off and nip it away. You know, that's just how red ball cricket works. But white ball cricket, obviously, is where the game's going, where the fans are. And it's because of these things. So matchups and stuff like that. We do look at it. We don't want to become unreactive to situations.
Absolutely. That's an excellent point and an excellent way of putting it. You have to be dynamic with regards to how you actually approach the game. You can't just rely on matchups, but they are interesting. I mean, they're a fantastic resource for us as fans to utilise. I mean, for myself, I love my cricket analysis. For anyone who follows me on Instagram, you'll know that. Post it pretty much every single day. But it is fascinating to kind of see what different combinations can actually work during a game. And obviously, they can work. They have worked before. They work in plenty of different occasions and different scenarios. But before we talk any more about analysis, we do need to talk about those Bears signings. And Joe, I actually want to come to you first for this one. because we have to talk about the big Bajan, the man who in 2016 broke all of our hearts in that World Cup final in Kolkata. What do you make of the Bears signing Carlos Brathwaite?
I think that is an excellent signing. I mean, I know you wanted Colin de Grandhomme back. I would say that's probably a better signing than Colin de Grandhomme. That's a better signing than de Grandhomme.
No more slander of Colin, though. I mean, I love Carlos.
I'm not saying he's not a good player. Not say de Grandhomme's not a good player, but I just think Brathwaite is, for a start, he's Bajan, so that's pretty cool, isn't it? Like, all Bajans are cool. I just think, cricket-wise, that is just he's such a powerful hitter, and I think he's kind of gone. He had such high standards to live up to, didn't he, after that World Cup final? And not that he didn't live up to them, not that he didn't perform well, I should say. He didn't necessarily live up to them, though, because of the bar he set himself was so high. Obviously, that was an incredible final, an incredible feat that he performed. But I just think Brathwaite is a very, very effective cricketer. And I think one thing that he will bring is dynamism in the field. Mm. I think, you know, typically a lot of West Indies' best players are great fielders as well. You know, you think of the likes of Pollard, Bravo, Holder. They're all, just, you know, to name a few, they're all great fielders. Obviously, those guys, especially, certainly Pollard and Bravo, are getting on a bit now. But especially in franchise tournaments around the world, they're great fielders. Even Chris Gayle is, you know, got bucket hands at slip, although he doesn't necessarily move as well.
He's not the most mobile, but when he does dive, it's amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. He still takes catches. And I think Brathwaite is another one on that list. So I think that will be, a massive benefit for Warwickshire. I barely watched Warwickshire last year because I just didn't click on their live streams. So I couldn't really tell you how high Warwickshire's fielding standard is compared to other counties who I've maybe seen more. Obviously, Lancs being like the main one, who, by the way, have a great fielding standard. But I think Brathwaite will come in and just add that extra bit of dynamism and that extra bit of versatility to Warwickshire's fielding. And obviously, his batting and bowling comes along with that, really. He's a winner, isn't he? He literally won the Big Bash a month ago. So, you know, that's a great signing.
I mean, I have to concur. I mean, first of all, of course, Colin, I'll always have that much admiration for Colin de Grandhomme. 2017, that quarterfinal in Surrey, that partnership alongside Grant Elliott, it's the stuff of legend. You don't forget those kind of nights down at the Oval. But with regards to Carlos, just my thoughts on this signing. I really, really like it because he's been in scintillating form. You mentioned there in the Big Bash. Of course, with the bat, we know what he can do. He can unleash six after six after six. But not just with the bat. It's also with the ball. He's been in really, really good form. Today, for example, in the Pakistan Super League, took 2 for 20 from 4 overs. In the Big Bash for the Sydney Sixers, who were the champions, he was their second leading wicket taker, took 16 wickets with his seam. So he also presents a different bowling option for Warwickshire to utilise. He's clever with his changes of pace. He's a very good and consistent bowler. And of course, with the bats. I mean, something which Warwickshire did struggle with last season, and James, I imagine you'll back me up on this one, was finishing off games at times. We struggled to find that middle to lower order firepower. We'd got off to decent starts. We'd go through the middle overs, but we were struggling to get 50 or 60 plus runs, for example, from the final 5 overs. So bringing in Carlos, bringing in that match winner, that X factor option in the batting lineup for me is absolutely fantastic. He's a great character. He's a good leader. He's an excellent fielder, good batsman, good bowler. I can't wait. I really can't. And if we are afforded the opportunity to go to Edgbaston this season, get down there. Simple as that, because he'll be absolutely dynamite to watch in a Bears shirt. He really will. And James, of course, we have to touch upon this because you obviously had I'm guessing you had a decent part to play in the signing of Brathwaite as the analyst. But what was the thought process behind bringing in Carlos to Edgbaston? What was the actual reasoning behind bringing him to the Fortress? I know you can't go into too much detail per se, but just a basic understanding, if you could.
Yeah, so I'll answer the first part of your question first. Recruitment is quite important to an analyst, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, not important to an analyst, but an important part of my job. So in that sort of off season where I'm looking at trends of the game, that's also where I do recruitment analysis. And we were looking for like you said, that sort of that middle order player that's gonna provide us some firepower as well. It's funny you mentioned the death. Looking at our sort of stats in the last 3 years, over 16 to 20, we've averaged 52 runs.
It's not bad. Most of those Colin.
I was surprised as well. Most of it was Colin. Colin was a great bloke. But yeah, it was that sort of over 7-15 that we wanted to shore up. And you know, Carlos will be a great signing. He's going to help us in the field as well, provide some energy. And, you know, you've also got that option with the ball. I mean, it's funny. My brother, unfortunately, plays for Worcester. And I texted him the signing when it was announced. And his reply was, he's done nothing since he hit those sixes. Oh, well, it's not quite true, is it? But it just shows that there's anxiety around. He's a great signing, and you know, I'm looking forward to when he arrives on English soil, and he can be around the dressing room.
Absolutely, yeah, and you could tell by the fan reaction as well on social media. I mean, Twitter was absolutely going off with like 99% positive comments. I think I only counted one saying again, it was along the same lines. What's he done since 2016?
But that's what I was saying. He's set his standards so high through no fault of his own that he can still be a great cricketer without reaching those extremely high. Like, they are, if Stokes did that, he could do that again. And that's probably the only person, the only all-rounder I could think of off the top of my head that can do that time and time again is Stokes in international cricket. I'd probably say Dan Christian. Like, I've seen Colin. Dan Christian do that. But honestly, I think Stokes is probably the only international cricketer, certainly all-rounder at the moment, who can do that once, do it again, do it a third time, do it a fourth time. So people say, what's he done since 2016? Well, he's actually done quite a lot. It's just that he's not done that to the same level. So, and James, I don't know if you can tell us this. I don't know if this is kind of like inside information, but do you have an idea of a team now, like an 11 for the T20 now? Do you have an idea of where he's in a bat? Is that not necessarily just you? I mean, like the coaching staff at Warwickshire. Is that something that you already formulate, or do you think it's way too early to think about?
I think generally the whole squad have an idea, but you know, I don't know whether you saw Mark Robinson sort of interview or members Q&A the other week. We were talking about that. I think they asked about Championship cricket.
Yes.
He was saying there's genuinely about 16 players that have got a shout of playing in that 11. But for the 8th of April. And that's a superb problem to have.
Yeah.
That's a superb headache to have. And it's sort of showing, it's manifesting itself in training. You know, lads are doing extra bits. Lads are staying longer and training harder to nail that spot in the side. So, you know, I think the squad have an idea of where Carlos fits in. But, that, you know, like I said, that presents itself in good problems.
I like that. I just liked hearing that the energy levels are up, the competition as well. It's always good to have that healthy competition between the team. It really brings out the best in players. So that's very, very nice to hear, James. And of course, talking of that Q&A, I think it's Paul Farbrace who mentioned this about top order batsmen. And this is exactly what Warwickshire have done. They're bringing Peter Milan. Now, this was an interesting signing for me because I do watch South African cricket. I've seen this guy for the Cape Cobras. He's arguably one of the most consistent performers in South African domestic cricket. He's got over 10,000 first-class runs, a very good first-class average of 44.36. And not only that, I remember his test debut at Newlands. He scored 84 against England, of course, in the same test where a certain Warwickshire opener, Dom Sibley, scored 133 not out in the second innings in one of the most incredible recent knocks in memory. But of course, James, I wanted to know the thought process behind this because there are so many world-class openers in the world right now. You look at Mohammad Rizwan, for example, the guy scoring runs for fun. Another one from New Zealand, Devon Conway, who is scoring runs for fun in the exact same vein. You've got all of these fantastic Australian and South African openers. What was it about Peter Milan which actually drew him to Edgbaston? What was it specifically about him in terms of attributes, traits, technique? What was it that the Bears wanted out of Peter Milan?
Yeah, so there was a number of players that we were, you know, looking at and approaching. Unfortunately, one sort of fell through a little bit. But we were always looking at Peter. Like you say, his stats, his numbers are very, very good. Mm-hmm. His first class average is, you know, on the better side of 40-45, and he provides that stability, you know, with Sibbers doing pretty well with England at the minute, averaging more than 30 in Test match cricket. People have said they can see Dom with England for quite a while. If that is the case, that then means that the Rhodes-Sibley partnership at the top of our order that's been pretty stable actually since sort of 2017, late 2017. That gets broken up, which is a shame. With Peter coming in, that means that Yatesy can bat at number three, and allow Yatesy more sort of relaxing time, and allow Yatesy to go and score some runs. So everyone drops down one, which then provides us with with plenty of options. It also means that we've got a great chance of setting up a solid platform if we win the toss and bat first on day one of a championship game, to create a solid platform and try and go past that average winning first in his score.
Interesting. Yeah. And with regards to Peter Millan, I just wanted to touch upon his play style, because you mentioned Dom Sibley. Of course, a lot of people mention about his scoring rate, the way in which he scores his runs, very onside heavy. But with Peter Millan, what do you make of him as a cricketer? Because for me, as I said, I've watched him in domestic cricket, seen him for the Proteas. He kind of reminds me, not a like-for-like replacement per se, but he's also very similar. He's very gritty, he's very determined, he's a very dogged character up the top of the order, and then he kind of expands as his innings progresses. What do you make of him as a player?
Again, another two-pronged question. I'll come to the Sibley bit of the question first. Dom scored, thousands of first-class runs, mm-hmm. And sort of proved his point to the England selectors that he needed to get picked. So he got picked, went up to test match cricket, got out once or twice, and then people started slating his technique. And unfortunately for Dom, he started listening to them. I don't know whether you heard Paul Farbrae say this.
Yeah.
But Dom started listening to them. He then came back, had a few hits with Tony Frost, and stopped listening to them. And suddenly he goes away and scores a really nice 50 in Sri Lanka, a good 80, 90 in that first test match. And, he is now England's opening batsman. And then coming on to that second part of the question, Peter's a fabulous player. Mm-hmm. He's a really, really good player. If you actually look at his stats, he can keep wicket, he can bowl, and he can bat. So,
but he can do it all, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, he provides us with plenty of options and good experience in the dressing room as well, especially for the lesser experienced lads in there that have oodles of talent. Even the bowlers he can help out and just say, as an opening batter, this is what I don't want. So the younger lads in the dressing room, the sort of the George Garretts, the Dan Mosleys, those sorts of guys are going to reap the benefits of Peter being around the dressing room.
That's what we like to hear. And of course, both those guys, former guests here on the Counter Cricket Podcast, both excellent young cricketers as well. I might just add, and fantastic characters. They really were fantastic here on the podcast.
James, do you worry that if Dom Sibley, because obviously he's not going to go to the IPL because he wasn't in the auction. So do you worry that when he comes back, if he can play Red Bull cricket for Warwickshire, if DCB make him available, do you worry that unbalances the side? Because then you've obviously got Millan, you mentioned Yates, who's been opening the batting, Rose and Sibley. That's pretty much four openers. Yeah, do you worry that kind of unbalances?
Not at all. It's testament to Peter that he's such a good player. He's batted at number three in first class cricket before. He's a versatile player, but it comes back to that competition for places again. That sort of healthy competition around the squad is what drives the team forward. It's what Mark Robinson's creating in that new training environment here that he's trying to create. So this morning, whilst me and Frosty took some of the batters, he had the bowlers in our group, and they were playing Yorker golf amongst themselves, and there was some good banter being flown around from that side of the hall. So it's creating that sort of healthy competition around the squad. And I think we're in for an exciting summer of red and white ball cricket from the Bear and Ragged staff.
Fingers crossed. It's what we all want. I mean, it's been a couple of difficult seasons down at Warwickshire, to be honest. 2020 ended in heartbreaking fashion in Jeetan's final game against Northants. Tom Taylor, the hero, again, a former guest here on the County Cricket Podcast. 2019, ridiculously injury-ridden. I mean, we barely even had a bowling attack. We had a bowling attack at one point with James Wainman, who had come up through... Was it second 11 cricket?
Yeah, second 11.
It was second 11 cricket for James Wainman. Of course, bringing in Fidel Edwards. He came in, didn't he, for part of the season. Ben Mike came in on loan. Who else? Toby Lester, of course, yeah, from Lancs. So, yeah, it has been a couple of, what to say, not ideal seasons for the Bears, but 2021 does seem to be on the up. I mean, I personally am feeling quite optimistic. I'm not going over my head. I'm not going on and saying we're going to replicate 1994 and get the treble. but it definitely does appear as though there's a bit of optimism here at Warwickshire County Cricket Club. And
Imagine if we did, Aaron. I'm joking. All I'm saying is last decade, we won in the evens. This decade, I think we're going odds.
Hey, I'll take that. And the piece about the treble, I mean, personally, of course, I'd love that. I don't think the listeners would, because you'd have years upon years upon years of me bringing that up again and again and again. But James, in that previous passage, you mentioned Mark Robinson. Of course, in 2021, we've got a brand new coach. What's he been like around the players? What's he like at the ground? What is he like as a character, per se?
Well, do you know what? Robbo's superb. He's been... His first couple of weeks, he stayed pretty sort of incognito, actually, and just sort of lurked in the background. However, I don't know a single person that Robbo hasn't had a sit-down and chat with. You know, he spoke to all of us, coaches and players, and support staff. And he's settled in really nicely. Like I say, he's created a really, really good training environment for the lads. And he's really good at motivation. So, you know, sort of at the end of every week, we'll get some sort of quote that's related to the training we've done that week. And everything's gearing up for us to win the championship, to win the 2020, to win the RL50. You know, Robbo's whole sort of aura and sort of vibe that he gives off, it's when we win. It's not if we win, it's when we win.
Well, of course, he does have a proven track record as well. Didn't he? He got 7 trophies during his time at Sussex. It was a golden era for the Martlets.
Yeah, he went well.
At Hove. And of course, 2017 as well, with the ICC Women's World Cup, which was won in England against India in an incredible final, must be said. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing him in terms of his philosophies and his approach to see how it rubs off on the players. I really am, because he is a proven winner. I think that was the key thing with the appointment. We didn't go for an up-and-coming coach. We went for someone with that history. And Mark Robinson has done it before in county cricket. I think that was the other key. The fact that he's proven in county cricket. He's done it here in England and Wales. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he actually approaches the managerial role or the head coach role at Warwickshire. But of course, before we move on to the England versus India test discussion, which could be another hour and a half, we do have to talk about this year's domestic talent. So I mentioned earlier about Sam Hain. He signed a 2-year contract extension. Ollie Hannon-Dalby, this is fantastic, by the way. I think everybody at Warwickshire loves the Owl. He's a fantastic character, great bloke and a fantastic bowler. He's also signed a 2-year extension. Lintott coming back, who was our most economic bowler in 2020, 6.30 economy rate, 10 wickets as well, had an absolutely standout season. And then, of course, a few months beforehand, bringing in Manraj Chahal from the academy, bringing in Jacob Bethel as well, who's a really highly touted prospect. And, of course, Danny Briggs, Brigatoni, coming in, leading wicket taker in T20 Blast history. So, James, I just wanted to ask, out of those guys, who do you think that Warwickshire fans should really be on the lookout for? What insights can you give us into, in particular, those last three that I mentioned, Manraj, Jacob and Danny? But what about from the core as a whole as well? What can we expect from our homegrown talent in this season?
Yeah, you know, I think sort of our latest signings just sort of sum up us as a club at the minute and where our vision sort of is. So we have got at the top end, we've got a few with experience, you know, we've got a few experienced campaigners in Sam and Ollie and Danny coming to join the club. But we've also got, you know, quite a young squad as well through Manraj, Jacob, you know, that it's exciting talent coming through. So those joining up with Dan and George as well, who are part of the squad here. There's plenty of talent knocking around that dressing room. It's going to be up to sort of Tim Bresnan, Mark Robinson, Danny Briggs, those guys with experience to help shape those guys and guide them through, especially in Red Bull cricket in that first period of the season. To answer your question, you know, Briggsy's going to be a really exciting prospect in T20 cricket. He's been signed in the 100 draft, which shows what a talent he is. As well as Ollie Stone, who got picked up in the 100 a couple of weeks ago, at the start of the week. So, you know, there's talent around the dressing room, and I genuinely think it's an exciting time to be a Warwickshire fan.
Of course, yeah. And it has been a very, very good February, because I remember before Christmas, of course, I've mentioned those three last guys, but that was it. Things were very, very quiet. And then end of January, with the announcement of Mark Robinson, since then, it's just one after the other after the other. I mean, it's been very, very exciting down at Warwickshire. Yep. It really has. Just one more question, though, James, and this is about experience. Okay, so you mentioned Tim Bresnan. Fantastic example of this, bringing in an older head, a wise, hardened veteran county cricketer. Of course, bringing in Peter Milan, who's in his 30s now. Carlos Brathwaite as well, 32 years of age. Do you worry about this side in terms of inexperience? Because in 2019 and 2020, that's something which could have been argued. We had a lot of academy guys coming through, the likes of Dan, George, Rob, for example, Ethan Brooks, Henry Brooks. All of these guys are very, very young. And when I look at this squad, even with those experienced guys coming in this season, the average age is still only around 26. Now, in comparison, that's more than Leicestershire, which is around about 25. Lancs as well, it's around 26.15. And then Notts, who, of course, are this year's defending champions of the T20 Blast. Their average age is 27.4. So do you worry about experience? Is that something which Warwickshire could be looking to address per se, not only this season, but in the future? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, good question. So as an analyst yourself, you might like this.
Go on.
Looking at some stats the other day and just sort of looking at Essex and Somerset in their Red Bull cricket, because obviously their past couple of years in Red Bull cricket have been by far and away the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done is sort of their lineup, looked at their average first class appearances per player, well, for the team. And Essex and Somerset had an average of more than 100 first class appearances than our team. So, you know, experience can be a big thing. And Paul Farbrace has mentioned before that, you know, we got Perez in to be an experienced head for the bowlers. Remember, Belly signed an extension, a contract extension until the end of this year. Unfortunately, Belly retired. So that Belly was meant to be the sort of the mentor for the batters in a way. Unfortunately, that's not transpired. But you know, Peter will be around for the Red Bull side of things this year, and he will be able to help the batters there. So experience does help. But there's plenty of talent in our dressing room, and there's only so much experience can help with, you know. The talent has to be there before the experience can help guide it.
100%. Very, very good points. And yeah, I mean, I quite like the mix of youth and experience down at Warwickshire. Of course, we have got some fantastic names coming through. Another one, I know he hasn't got a first team contract, but we saw him in 2020, Vicky Kelly, behind the stumps against Northants, those two stumpings off Jeetan Patel and Jake Lintott's bowling. My word, the comment section on Northants' stream were going absolutely off. So he's another exciting talent.
He's a great guy. Interesting fact about Vicky, he's played for England in indoor cricket.
There you go. Fun facts about Vicky Kelly. So when he turns into a superstar wicketkeeper for the Bears, there we go. We'll know why. Indoor cricket has definitely helped. But yeah, just one final question, of course, on the Warwickshire front, James. What do you think the fans should expect from 2021? Because you can argue that on paper, there are better teams. Of course, Somerset and Essex have been so dominant in Red Bull cricket. They are the two powerhouses in the county championship. Of course, we mentioned Nottinghamshire. They seem to just be in and around the T20 Blast every single season. What do you think that the fans should be expecting from this group of Warwickshire players heading into 2021?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. It'd be nice to win something, obviously. But we've got our targets that we've set ourselves out with here at the dressing room. The lads are all striving to achieve those. And the county championship's an interesting format this year with its three groups. We're hopeful that we can be in and around the sort of top half of that group. If we play our cricket and we play good spells of cricket, we've got a massive chance of doing that. The depth in our bowling attack for red and white ball is pretty serious this year. And personally, I feel we've got the batters to back that up. But, all we need to do is train hard, and hopefully we'll come out on the right side of some results. That's all we can say for now, really, and until we get into the season and we can reassess or keep going as needs be.
Of course. Yeah, and of course, fingers crossed, we're allowed back in. It's been far too long since the fans have been back at our respective grounds. So yeah, fingers crossed, we're all allowed back in at 100%. Some point this summer.
On that, you know, the lads are praying for fans back in. the game against Worcester last year, yes, we won, but it wasn't a patch on, you know, the numbers that we normally have in it and the noise from the Hollies. Like Canal said, you know, you get to the sort of the 15th, 16th over of a second innings of a T20 and you're thinking, when Sweet Caroline coming on, you know? It'll be good to see the Hollies bouncing again for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been far too long. Been far, far too long. And of course, we all remain optimistic of fans returning in 2021. And yeah, from a personal perspective as well, seeing Warwickshire do well would be fantastic. Of course, been, what now, 3 years since we won a trophy 2018. I know that sounds really entitled to some other fans. But yeah, we could do with a trophy heading into this season. And of course, should be very, very exciting for us all heading into 2021. But that pretty much brings our main segment about Warwickshire County Cricket Club to a close. Although James, to be honest, in a future episode, we'll probably bring up the Bear and Ragged staff again. But of course, we do have to end today's podcast by touching a bit upon what can only be described as one of the most extraordinary test matches in recent history. Okay, it was the shortest test match in terms of balls delivered since 1935. So post-war, there has not been a shorter test match in international cricket. So, Joe, I just want to get your thoughts on this. How on earth would you analyse the carnage that took place in Ahmedabad over the past 2 days?
I think there's three ways of like looking at it, and well, that generally people have been looking at it. So people have been saying, some people have been saying the batting was awful. Some people were saying the pitch was awful and did not help either side. Well, obviously, it kind of helped India in the end because they ended up winning, but generally didn't help either side. And some people saying the bowling was exceptional. I think Joe Root said it pretty well, and he said this himself, so this is not going to sound harsh. I'm merely quoting him. He said something like, if I got a fiver on that wicket, you know it's not a good wicket. And I think that kind of says it all. Sure, the batting wasn't good. I think Crawley and Sharma showed that you can actually bat on that pitch. They both got 50s. They both batted very well. Apart from that, nobody really did anything with the bat. I mean, Crawley got 27. And that's literally it, isn't it? It was bizarre. And then Rohit Sharma obviously whacked a load of runs. Mm-hmm. Well, I say a load of runs. He got like, 25 not out or something in the second innings. He was probably the best player in the whole test with the bat pretty comfortably. But it was just, it was the weirdest test I've ever seen, without a doubt. It was just so bizarre. You know, like, I guess the fact that it was a day-night test as well, it started at 9 a.m, ended at like 5 p.m, half four. That was kind of like, they kind of like picked this test to do that on purpose, just to rub it into England fans. Like, you don't actually have to get up early, but we're only going to have 2 days off the test. So, yeah, it was, I mean, England were awful. Let's not beat around the bush. England were absolutely useless. Literally, like, with bat and ball, pretty much nobody was, I mean, the batters got themselves out. So, yeah, a lot of work needs to be done. But I said it at the end of the second Chennai test, and I'll say it again. You know, look what happens when you put a crowd back in. England smashed India in the first test behind closed doors. Then they put a crowd back in for the next two tests, and England got smashed twice. So to me, that says a lot. That says a lot.
Well, there we go. Could be the Indian fans. And to be fair, you have to give a shout out to those fans who turned up for the first two days.
I mean, that stadium was 100,000 capacity, and they made it 110,000. They made it seem like there was that many people in there. They were so loud.
100%.
So, yeah. I also feel very sorry for day 3, 4, and 5 ticket holders.
Same. Yeah. And not only that, they don't get a refund either. That's what I've been told from people in Ahmedabad.
That is shocking. That is shocking. Even the ECB wouldn't do that.
Look at your two faces. That was my exact reaction as well. But of course, we're not the Indian domestic cricket podcast. We'd have to leave that to some other experts on a different podcast. But in terms of the test itself, James, I want to get your thoughts as well before I really dig into this and offer my two cents. But what did you make of, as we keep on saying, one of the most bizarre test matches in recent history?
I've still not really caught up, to be honest. we started training. Training is 3.5 hours, 9 till 12:30. We started training, India were 3 down. We finished training, and Stuart Broad's batting.
That says it all.
Yeah.
That literally just says it all.
Not the best of signs.
Like, genuinely didn't know what was going on. I had loads of notifications coming up on my watch, and at the end I just had a scroll, and it was just the ECB app going, wicket, wicket, like mental.
Yeah.
What I said is, I'm all for a turning pitch. You know, I'm all for the ball pitching outside off a missing leg, but not on day one.
The thing I think as well is, sorry, Aaron, that the pitch, like what, 5 days out? That looked like a New Zealand grounds and prepared that. Oh, honestly, that's something you get in like November in New Zealand. And then to end up like that, but I bet, feel a bit sorry for Dom Best, really. Spare a thought for him because, you know, he missed out on selection when realistically England actually should have picked him. I mean, he would have got bags of wickets as well on that, as Leach did, as Root did, but Root would have even bowled. So I bet he's not as disappointed. But
That would have been a difficult selection, that from the analyst's point of view.
Mm.
The sort of before every game, I can't say for England or other counties, but you know, I generally look at venue stats here for red or white ball, whatever format we're playing, and just say, oh look, in the first 10 overs, the ball spins this much. If there's tracking data available, if not, it'll be like, oh, in the first 10 overs, wickets 75% spin.
Mm-hmm.
So we might want to bowl more spin. Obviously, at a new stadium, you can't do that.
Well, that's the thing that we mentioned. We mentioned this on the Roloff van der Merwe podcast right at the beginning, was the fact that India chose their team based off of the pitch and the conditions. They went with three spinners in Akshar Patel, Ravi Chandran Ashwin and Washington Sundar.
And with England, Sundar didn't even get a bowl, apart from one over in the whole test.
I know. I felt bad for him. A TFC, thanks for coming. That's what they call it. Yeah, thanks for coming.
If I could bowl one over in a test match and walk away with a test match win, that's me.
And a wicket, because he did get a wicket.
Yeah, he did get a wicket.
There you go.
So,
100%, yeah, you'll take it. But then with England's selection, for me, I thought they did it based off the ball alone. Because when we look at England's previous pink ball fixtures, 2017 at Edgbaston, of course, against the West Indies, 2017 Ashes, well, 2017-18 it was, against Australia. And then, of course, that 2018 against New Zealand, where we got bowled out for 58. There we go. We bowled out for 58 against New Zealand, which wasn't great. Probably not the greatest for omens heading into this particular test match either. But I think that we chose that team based on how they thought the pink ball would react under lights. Bringing in Jimmy Anderson, bringing in Stuart Broad, bringing in Jofra for that ball to slide on. And I just wanted to discuss a little bit about the ball, because this was so interesting. I'm guessing that you two, well, James, you may not have seen it seeing as you're working, but Simon Hughes did a fantastic piece about the pink ball, the SG pink ball. So it has a really pronounced seam. And in addition to that, it has a really quite shiny lacquer. It's a really heavy lacquer. It's a lot heavier than the standard red ball. And this means that it stays shiny. It means that it'll slide on basically for up to 50 or 60 overs, if not even 70. He had an 80 over ball and it barely looked like it'd even been scuffed. It was absolutely extraordinary to see. So I just wanted to know your two thoughts on the actual ball itself. Do you think that contributed to it? Because it's the SG pink ball, because that lacquer under the lights, it's the ball sliding on. And I think Joe Root himself mentioned this about the pace of the ball coming on. Because England's batting technique against spin traditionally has been off the back foot. It's playing off the back foot, moving around in the crease, playing cut shots, late cuts. And in this particular test match, that wasn't working. There were so many sliding on, being bowled, LBW. I think 21 out of the 30 entire dismissals in this test match were from straight balls. So LBW or bowled. That is absolutely just staggering. So I just wanted to know, in fact, Joe, I'll start with you for this one. What did you make of the ball? Do you think that the ball itself was a factor in this particular test match?
I think it's quite unfair that you can use a different kind of ball per country. So obviously we use the Dukes in England, and they use the Kookaburra most other countries, and then obviously the SG out in India. That, to me, that's not fair. You wouldn't use it's different. It's effectively like a whole different ball, isn't it? It's a whole different thing. The ICC need to just choose a Kookaburra. For me, is the one that's most universally used, so that should be the one that's used. The ICC need to choose that and stick with that, or choose the Dukes and stick with that. But they'll probably end up choosing the SG, let's be honest. But I don't understand how you can have that. To me, that's not fair. Doesn't make for fair cricket. But I guess that's how the sport is. And I think you mentioned how effectively the ball didn't get scuffed once in the whole test. I think the speed of the spinners showed that Ashwin doesn't generally bowl that quick, and he's bowling pretty quick in this test. Same with Axar. They're not Rashid Khan pace for a spinner, you know, but they were bowling very quick.
Well, Leachie's another one as well. Leachie's exactly, yeah. Kind of flight and drift bowler, isn't he? And he was getting exactly, some fantastic perches.
Yeah, so I think that kind of says it all. But, you know, the pitch just does not help. Like, I think for me, everything in this test comes down to A, England's useless batting, and B, the pitch was just terrible. The pitch was just absolutely terrible. And sure, the ball may not have helped England with regards to their, as you say, they like to play off the back foot. They probably should have come forward more. But you just think of some of the shots that they played. Like, I know we didn't get out to it. I mentioned it before we start recording. But in the second innings, the first ball he faced, Ollie Pope played a switch hit. Like, what is that all about? You just don't do that. You know, like, what? I don't know what, and I'm not really one to criticise Johnny Bairstow. I don't know what he was doing in that second innings. He was lucky not to get out the very first ball. Then he obviously did get out the next ball. Like, most of the shots were just useless, really, let's be honest. And I think Stokes had went the best way about it. And he just tried to smash it. And to me, that was the best thing to do because, they're smashing it and they're doing what Ollie Pope did. So you've got to be smart about it. So, yeah, I think England really only have themselves to blame. Sure, you can shift the blame to the pitch, as Root did. And I agree with them to a certain extent. But it was awful batting, let's be honest.
That's the thing. It was a combination of factors, wasn't it, at the end of the day? I feel like each of these factors have contributed to one of the most extraordinary test matches. One thing you can't say, that it was ever boring. I mean, it wasn't.
Oh, that is true. 2 days, yeah.
It was up, down, up, down, up, down. I'm talking about heart rate now. Okay, it felt like absolutely hammering through your chest because it was just non-stop. It was non-ending. Yeah. This is test match cricket. There's meant to be ebbs and flows. And this was every single minute, every single delivery was a moment. It was a moment where you think a wicket's going to fall. There's going to be a four. There's going to be a six. I mean, it was extraordinary viewing, but at the same time, it was a 2-day test match. You mentioned right at the beginning there, Joe, about Channel 4's coverage. You think how many people would have tuned in for a day three today? We're recording this on a Friday, Saturday, for example. They would have had millions of potential viewers. They're now gone. The exact same thing in India as well, with those potentially 110,000 people have missed out on watching Test Match Cricket. And of course, we're not going to mention the refund policy again, but they've spent their money now on that and they're not going to watch any cricket. So for me, I don't even know what to make of it. Because it was great, great viewing while it happened. But then we're sat here the day after. There's no cricket on. There's now no cricket on for another week. We're missing out on quality test match cricket. You think of the opportunity we had in this series. The day-night test was the blockbuster one because it's on at a good time for people working. It's one that you can find in the morning. It's not on at 4 a.m, for example. So I don't know what to make of it, to be honest. James, can you try and make something out of it? How would you actually explain this particular test match?
Yeah, your point there about it not being broadcast anymore is a really big shame.
Huge.
In England. Obviously, the Indians don't have a problem with a love of cricket, but in England, you know, look at what we're trying to do here this summer with the 100. We're trying to appeal to potentially a new audience. You know, we've got the audience of county cricket. You know, we've got people that will go and watch a Red Bull 4-day game, Warwickshire versus Durham.
Absolutely.
10-year-olds now don't want to go and watch Sam Hain leave the ball outside off stump for the fifth ball in a row.
But they should do.
Of course.
Great yeah. Entertainment, of course.
It's a gorgeous sight because the sixth ball will be going through extra cover for four. But 10-year-olds now go to cricket and they want to see how far Jos Buttler can hit the ball out of the oval.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how far Owen Morgan can hit the ball over the pavilion at Lord's. Not many people, you know, they go to cricket to see how fast Jofra Archer can bowl. That's what they go to cricket for. And that's why I'm genuinely excited about the 100. I know that's not county cricket, really, but I'm really excited about it. And I just feel in that 2-day test match, we've missed just a smidgen of opportunity. Not through any fault of the ECB, don't get me wrong. But there's just a small opportunity been missed to begin to capture an audience and go, oh, actually, I might watch the 100 that's on BBC television this year. A shameless plug for the Birmingham Phoenix, who are in the summer, but there we go.
Well, of course, and it is a great point. And this was the big thing that I took away, because for the short term, it's brilliant. And I will never, ever blame or make excuses for an England performance. The fact is, England weren't good enough. India outplayed us. It's a 10-wicket win. Okay, you can't say it's down to third umpiring, you can't say it's down to the pitch, the ball conditions, whatever. The fact is, India played better cricket. Axar Patel, Ravi Chandran Ashwin, absolutely sensational. I thought Ishant Sharma as well, in his 100th test, really set the tone and the tempo with that opening spell to Dom Sibley. But that's the short term. The long term, which I was thinking for England, we mentioned about 110,000 people missing out in terms of in the stadium itself. In England, it's potentially millions, because it's Friday, it's Saturday, it's prime time viewing. And instead, no offence meant at all here when I say come dine with me, it's a perfectly fine show. But the fact is, cricket fans would have wanted to see England versus India. It's a blockbuster series. They're ones where legends and heroes are created. It's one of the biggest series in cricket. This also had implications for the World Test Championship. And we've been robbed of that chance to watch this team. And fair enough, England are equally to blame. We should have played better. It's as simple as that. But it's a huge opportunity missed. It's a massive, massive opportunity. And it's one which, it's just a shame. It's a massive, massive shame. I feel quite disappointed as a cricket fan not to be able to reach that audience and capture the imaginations, a bit like 2005 would have done, or the 2019 World Cup. I know it's maybe not to the same extent in terms of rivalry. But yeah, I just think we're going to rue a missed opportunity there. And it's a massive shame. But of course, fourth test, do have another opportunity. Hopefully people will tune in. I know the viewing figures have been okay. But James, what did you also make? I did have another question here, actually. And of course, that is about the pitch. Because the pitch has been an interesting one. There's a fantastic video by Jared Kimber, one of my absolute favourite analysts, makes brilliant YouTube videos. And he showed one particular screenshot from the BCCI's Hawkeye, which was a Ravi Chandran Ashwin over. Okay, it was to Dom Sibley and Joe Root. And they were six deliveries pretty much on the same exact spot. Good line, good length, and there was huge variation. One of the balls bounced over. You couldn't actually see it in the screenshot. Two turned to the onside, two turned to the offside, and one stayed really low hitting the stumps. What would you make of that pitch, James? What did you actually make of the pitch and the obviously the argument and controversy which has arisen from it?
I don't want to be batting, I'll tell you that.
I don't think anyone did.
No. See, Hawkeye can sometimes be misleading. So obviously, that ball tracking graphic that you've seen doesn't paint a great picture, to be honest. Although people sometimes forget that could be the genuine skill of Ashwin. You know, Ashwin's wrist position behind the ball, if you look at the footage of it, is superb. Mm-hmm. If he wants to rag it, he gets over the top of the ball really well. But he has also got a really good top spinner. Okay, mm-hmm. So the ball that goes over the top of the stumps is probably his top spinner that he's got really well. The ones that go the other way are probably the Karen ball that comes out the front of his hand. Was that graphic from the last test, the day-night test?
It was, yeah. I think it was the eighth over. I'm pretty sure it was.
Okay, so because I didn't answer your question about the ball.
Oh, of course, yeah. Go on to that.
So I coach a lot of the time with a pink ball. You know, I use a pink ball out of the robo arm. The reason for that is that the seam is really, really, really proud. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in terms of a spinner, when it comes out, if it hits that seam, it's going to rag. Mm-hmm. If it just misses it, it can slide on. If it clips half and half, it can turn a little bit. Okay. So I think some of it will be the pitch, you know, the pitch has to assist spin. Some of it will be the ball and the proud spin and the proud seam, sorry, allowing the ball to rag either way. But some of it will also be Ashwin's skill. You know, we've seen him in county cricket before, the knots. And I think he's played for Worcester as well, hasn't he?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
A few years back.
Analyst knowledge. He's done well. That's because of his wrist position. He's a very similar bowler to Simon Harmer. Simon Harmer's wrist position is gorgeous.
Hmm. Well, of course, yeah. No one can deny that. Ravi Chandran Ashwin is one of the best bowlers in world cricket right now. He's got 400 wickets. We mentioned it right at the beginning of today's podcast. The second fastest in history, behind only Mathai Muralitharan, who, of course, also had county stints at Lancashire and Gloucestershire. But it is really fascinating, and it is multiple factors. But I just wanted to make one final point for today's podcast and one final profound question. And it is about pink ball, because we've seen pink ball matches in county championship before. Warwickshire played one against Durham in 2018, didn't we? Jonathan Trott scored a magnificent century up at the Riverside. But what do you make of the ECB? First of all, with regards to pink ball matches, should we actually make and play more pink ball matches in county cricket? And second of all, if we are going to play pink ball matches, should we allow a bit more leeway for grounds such as Taunton, for example, which is the one that everybody talks about, to be a bit more spin conducive? What are your thoughts on those two questions?
You made me giggle talking about Taunton. Personally, for me, I think pink ball is a great concept. It's a great idea because it allows... Here's how I see it, okay? So we've got the 100 coming this summer, which hopefully, all going well, is going to captivate a new audience, okay? So we're going to grab a whole new audience of cricket fans. You know, the fans that enjoy watching football rugby that last for an hour and a bit. Okay, that's what the 100 is going to last for. If we can captivate that audience and then we start showing, you know, the pinnacle of the game, this top format, pink ball, but four-day cricket where the ball's going around corners, if we can show that at a later time where, you know, a younger audience can come after school, even the experienced county fans can come after work, surely that's only good for the game.
Yep.
Surely. You know, Red Bull's good. And I think the pink ball does slightly less, especially in the air. It might do more off the pitch, which might make it more exciting. You know, if the ball's doing more later, I just think it's only good for the game.
I mean, I tend to agree, to be honest. We actually did an entire podcast, myself and Joe. And by the way, listeners, Joe has had to go to do his uni work now, so you may not hear him for the end of today's podcast. But we mentioned about this because it was a really exciting concept. So in 2017, for example, I was at Edgbaston watching us tear the West Indies to shreds. We beat them within 3 days in what was a very, very clinical performance from the Three Lions. 2018, I mentioned there with that game at the Riverside with Jonathan Trott on that century. It is a very, very exciting concept. And the key thing about pink ball cricket is that 9-to-5 audience. Whereas with a traditional game, 7 hours, but it starts about 10, 11 o'clock, depending on the time of year, of course, in county cricket, which means that you don't get people who are working 9-to-5s going to the cricket. They simply don't have the time. Whereas if you have a day-night match, it starts around 2 o'clock and it goes on till about 9, 9.30, depending on the over rate, of course. Depends on the team and, of course, what's gone on in the day. But it does open up this brand new audience. And the actual look, the aesthetics of seeing those white kits, the pink ball, the challenge, it's a test. Okay, and you get to see the best of the best going at it with a pink ball under the lights. It's a real special occasion. And for me, I feel like we could actually utilize it a bit more. It's a concept that needs to be explored. It's one that's been used in the Caribbean, for example, for the past 2-3 seasons in their four-day comp. So for me, I think just one game a year, I would quite like it. I personally liked it in 2018. I like pink ball cricket as a concept. It's new, it's fresh, and it's still the same. It's still four-day cricket at the end of the day. Nothing's changed. There's no silly rules being implemented, for example. So you're still getting the good products. But at the end of the day, I just feel like it'd be good to kind of foster that new audience and capture people's imaginations. So for me as well, James, I'm in agreement. I think that we should utilise it a bit more in county cricket. And then, of course, with regards to the second part of the question, should we be a bit more lenient towards spin-friendly conditions here in England? Because we all know the story with the ECB and the 24-point deduction with Somerset. What do you make of the ECB's treatment of spin-friendly pitches? Do you think that we should be a bit more lenient? Should we allow teams to produce rank turners here in England? What are your thoughts on that as an analyst?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a really tricky one. Hmm. Because, you know, there's been so many suggestions about it, hasn't there? There's been suggestions that we should be playing championship cricket in August where the ball is going to spin. If you look at where the championship fixtures are, it's April and sort of end of August, September. That's not really spin friendly, is it?
True.
Personally, I think pitches that spin are only good for the game. But I I think it should be a gradual deterioration of the pitch. I don't think the pitch should be going through the top. You know, the ball shouldn't be going through the top. For those that don't know what that means, it's as after the ball bounces, it's when the pitch deteriorates at that bounce, and you can physically see puffs of dust and rubble from the pitch. I don't think balls should be doing that on day one or two. Like I say before, I've not got a problem with a ball going from outside off and spinning past a missing leg stump on even day three. But day one and two, especially in England, you know, where the ball's not going to rag, it shouldn't be spinning a lot. But then you've got, you know, the likes of Michael Vaughan, Kevin Peterson suggesting that two or three county championship games a year should be played in Dubai where the ball rags. Have you not seen that suggestion before?
I have not, no.
So I think Michael Vaughan's very pro it that you play one or two games a year abroad where the ball spins a lot. I'm not sure how that would work, but it's just a suggestion from Michael Vaughan.
I was going to say, I mean, don't get me wrong, as fans, you wouldn't mind it going to Dubai. Wouldn't be a bad holiday destination at all. I don't think the players would mind it either, but it'd just be a really disjointed season, wouldn't it? I'm not sure the logistics behind that. I'm going to be honest.
I can't see how it would work. As long as it's in April, that means less coding in a woolly hat and three jumpers. I was coding, what was it? I think I was coding a 50-over game. In 2018, it was absolutely freezing. I'd got all my stuff on, and I think I ended up with Dom Sibley's jumper on because I was so cold.
Just says it all about English conditions, doesn't it? In particular, in early April, my word, especially like properly up north, like Yorkshire, Durham, does get very, very cold. But it's interesting. And of course, that does deserve a podcast in its own with regards to spin favourable conditions, spinning pitches, pink ball tests and pink ball county matches. But I think that's a fantastic way actually to end today's podcast, James, because it's been a long one. It's been very, very insightful. Obviously, I've loved it as a Warwickshire fan. It's been incredible to chat all things Bear and Ragged Staff with you today, mate. And of course, Joe enjoyed it as well. Joe isn't here. He's doing his uni work right now, but he'd also say the exact same thing. So James, just before we go, do you have any kind of just wrap up words, any social media channels, anything to promote, for example?
I could give myself a shameless plug here, couldn't I?
Can if you want.
No. if you want to follow me, it's jthomas17. I don't post too much Warwickshire stuff on there, to be honest. If you want to look at sort of analysis and how that world works, as Ireland's analyst has his own analysis page. I'm not sure whether you follow it, Aaron. Scott.
Scott. Is that his name?
Scott Irvine, yeah.
SI cricket, yeah. SI cricket analysis.
SI underscore analysis. So that's if you're interested in analysis, go and drop him a follow. But yeah, I'm excited for what's to come for this group of, you know, it's a talented squad. So I'm hoping for a good year. I'm sure you are as well as a Bears fan, but I think there's plenty to be excited about. And let me know if you're at Edgbaston Way. You know, if you and Joe come down, I'll come over and say hello.
No worries, James, of course. And thank you very much for coming on today. As I said, it's been a fascinating podcast. I mean, close to the season as well. If you want to come back on, you're more than welcome to, of course. I would be massively in favour of that as a Warwickshire fan.
Sadly.
Fantastic. But yeah, that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. James, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.